welcome your ears to episode number 200 of the Triple Option with RBKD on the horn, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260, streaming live all the time, when and wherever you may be, live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com. On today's show, the University of Texas at Alabama, lifetime Longhorn Earl Thomas is back in hot water, and Urban Meyer is apparently over all those health issues. Joined alongside by lifetime Longhorn and card-carrying member of DBU, he's a mercenary mouthpiece, pop culture critic, and the one they call Blackstradamus. He's also the inventor of the Corona kit. He is Rod Babers. Rod B, how are we doing today?
I'm doing great today. I appreciate the intro as always. Ready to get back to some Sark Week discussion here on the Horn.
No doubt about that. Also joined by a lifetime Longhorn and lifetime Austinite. He's so much of a man they had to take one of his balls away to keep it fair for the rest of us. He knows where your IT guy's IT guy went to college. He is Kevin Dunn. Kitty, what's going on?
Doing well. Hello.
Are you using the wrong mic? You're using the wrong microphone.
Uh-oh.
It's a great start to the show.
Uh-oh.
So.
That's you.
There we go. So anyway.
First time? There we go. Boom!
I never do that, but all these were kind of put together, and Chad is trying to spray this place down and clean it up.
Good for Chad.
Well, no one does it like you, brother. But Chad tries. And so he's got the mask on, and he puts all these things up, and I looked at him, and there's four of them, and I thought, all right, I thought I grabbed the right one, but I laughed at one of your jokes. That was a good open.
Thanks.
Rod's too nice. They're not always great, but they're usually good. And that one was great. That was funny. But I could tell, and you even looked up, and you still kept on going, which shows just how good you are, that I'm on the wrong mic, or something's going on with my audio, right?
Mm-hmm.
I could tell you knew.
It's our 200th episode, but for KD, it's his first time, apparently.
Yes.
Using the microphone.
Hey,
there.
Hey, it takes, it. Look, and this is my problem with Sark. And coaches, it takes about, you know, there's the Malcolm Gladwell rule, about 10,000 hours. It actually takes about 23-4 plus years to actually get
there
what
you
you've done since you were 15.
I love it. I'll be here as well. I am BK Brad Kellner. Together, we are the Triple Option with RBKD, rocking and rolling until 7 o'clock here on the Horn. We appreciate y'all spending some or all of your Thursday afternoon with us. And yes, as Rod B alluded to, Sark Week continues here on the flagship station for Texas Longhorn Athletics. We'll get to some Texas basketball. We'll talk Cowboys and Texans, but we got to open up with some of the coaching staff rumors that, well, they don't appear to be rumors as much anymore, gentlemen. It broke during our show yesterday that Kyle Flood is expected to leave Alabama to take a job on Sark staff here at the University of Texas. We have now found out that he is not only going to be the offensive line coach here at UT, but he's also expected to be named the offensive coordinator for Steve Sarkisian here in Austin as well. That was big news. I think we were all excited about that. But some maybe even bigger news that we got earlier today, Alabama's tight end and special teams coach Jeff Banks is reportedly set to join Steve Sarkisian's staff as well. He will reportedly be the assistant head coach and the special teams and tight ends coach here at the University of Texas. So, Rod B., I'll send this your way first. Some big names. And obviously, these guys have done really, really well under Nick Saban for the last few years in Tuscaloosa. But Steve Sarkisian able to poach some important assistants away from Saban and bring them here to Austin, Texas.
Yeah, if everything holds true, Jeff Banks, Kyle Flood ends up coming, A.J. Milwee, who's an offensive assistant. He's one of those analysts for Nick Saban. It probably would end up being, and I don't know, we know the Kyle Flood situation is also something that's still on the table because he has yet to fill the defensive coordinator position. But if he ends up getting Pete Golding from Bama too, that would be three coaches that he would take from Bama. That's a big deal. That's probably as many coaches, assistant coaches, that any coach who was going to another program to start their own regime, that's probably as many coaches as anybody has siphoned from Nick Saban. And we know Nick Saban does not like that. So Aggies, The Longhorns are doing you a favor. All right, you're welcome. You ain't even got to say thank you for that one. All right, we'll just weaken Nick Saban's blueprint, weaken his machine for you. But I do think that the Jeff Banks, if that holds true, the Jeff Banks move, and there have been contract details already thrown out there, so we're pretty sure that it's a full go on that one. If they end up taking Jeff Banks, that would be a true coup for Steve Sarkisian and really his staff, period, because Jeff Banks, you know, Kyle Flood came with Steve Sarkisian from Atlanta. He brought him in. So for Saban, you know, he didn't really go out and hand-pick Kyle Flood. That was more of a Steve Sarkisian suggestion, and Steve Sarkisian and Kyle Flood work really well together. And even the A.J. Milwee thing, A.J. Milwee was an offensive analyst slash assistant. So for Nick Saban, he's got, I don't know, 10 to 12 of those. Not as big of a deal either for Nick Saban. I think Nick Saban can replace those guys. But Jeff Banks, that's big. That's one of the best special teams coaches in the country, and he's a guy that had a lot of success recruiting on the road. You go look at all the guys he's been able to take credit for in recruiting. Everybody knows the names. You know, Kyle Allen, Christian Kirk, Kamar Wheaton. It's another one, Jalen Milroe. He's got those guys to his credit, so he's landed some really big fish in the recruiting game. So he's got a great reputation there. He's got Texas ties, and he's one of the best special teams coaches in the country. That is a coup d'etat for Steve Sarkisian in building his staff to take one of Nick Saban's best. The word on the street is Nick Saban very upset about that, KD.
No doubt. I mean, you put it well. And so for me, I'm trying to balance being kind of going through this before, like all of us have, and seeing some staffs be built. And it's so easy to talk yourself into it. But once I saw Banks and Flood is a done deal, people I've talked to within Alabama, they say Flood is really good at what he does. And I will reiterate just to make sure that people don't know. Look, the offensive line coach is different in the college and pro level, where usually with technical stuff and teaching technique, a lot of times that kind of at most positions, guys are at least a certain level. And with this, the offensive line is different. The offensive line coaches and offensive line players I've talked to say that there aren't that many guys that really know technique and really teach it well. And so that's why I think Flood's a big hire, and then you throw in Banks, $1 million per year. It's kind of flexing the UT muscle we've all talked about before, and do it before Saturdays and meritocracy. So, yeah, I'm all in right now. I'm really excited, BK, to where I was even talking with Paul on EGAT, and he goes, man, are you not as fired up as you should be? And I go, I'm just trying to manage that with what we know. These two today really kind of got me going where I'm like, let's go.
Yeah, I think they should, too. And you talk about UT flexing its bank account a little bit. That's a good thing, right? The only thing UT has flexed its bank account with football-wise has been paying buyouts
that
over
was
the
a compliment.
Last decade. Right, absolutely. And look, Todd Orlando has been the only seven-figure assistant coach that Texas has had over the last few years. And you're seeing assistants. I mean, Sark was making $2.5 million per year to be the offensive coordinator at Alabama. We know Texas has the money. They just haven't been using it as well as they probably should have over the last few years. So it's a good thing. Like, you've got the ability to flex your financial muscles a little bit, and I'm glad Texas is doing it. But yeah, Jeff Banks, I mean, you brought it up, Rod B., considered a top-tier special teams coach. He's considered an elite recruiter. You know, we've talked about it. And this is not all Jeff Banks. This is not all Steve Sarkisian, not all Kyle Flood. But we've mentioned how, at this moment, just under 3 weeks away from National Signing Day, the University of Texas only has one of the top 20 players in the state signed to play here in Austin. Alabama has four of the top 20 Texas players signed to play at Alabama. So a lot of that's the Saban machine, but these guys have been recruiting those dudes to Tuscaloosa, so they are really, really good recruiters as well. They have ties to the state of Texas because they've worked here before, and obviously they've been recruiting Texas really, really well over the last couple of years. And Rod B., I mean, you want as much of Sark's offensive assistants to be a part of this staff as possible, right? Like, this is the most efficient offense. What Alabama just put out this past season was the most efficient offense in the history of college football. You want him to bring as many of those assistants over to Austin as you possibly can. Does it guarantee that you're going to have the exact same success Alabama had? Of course not, but it gives you the best possible chance to recreate what was going on in Tuscaloosa over the past couple of years.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And you know, pretty much the offensive side of the ball is set. Kyle Flood is your off. I'm sure he's going to be OC, you know, co-OC, whatever. Steve Sarkisian is going to be the play caller, which by the way, is refreshing because Tom Herman was very cryptic about play calling and who was calling the plays. That was very annoying. Oh, it's a group. It's a group thing. It's a collaborative effort. We all get in on it. And sometimes I call. And then even when Yurcich came, we still didn't really know who was actually calling the plays.
No.
There was still some mystery surrounding that. And I'm glad Steve Sarkisian, there's going to be no mystery around it. It's going to be him calling the plays. He's the play caller. Kyle Flood's probably going to be the OC or co-OC / O-line coach. Jeff Banks, your tight end coach. The wide receiver coach, Andre Coleman. I'm sure Sark feels that what Andre Coleman brings to the table is valuable, and what he's lacking, he'll be able to compensate for that because he's going to be so hands-on and so intimate with this offense. Now, he's a play caller, but I'm sure he's going to be coaching some wide receivers and on coaching the individual assistants as well. So maybe that will give me a little more confidence in him, you know, bringing him back to the fold, because I originally thought they could upgrade at the wide receiver coach position with Andre Coleman there, but I want to trust Sark that he did his due diligence and that Andre Coleman gave him the best chance to win, and I like keeping Stan Drayton. I like that. So the offensive staff is done, and I'm with you. I think that gives him the best chance to try to replicate as much as possible from that Alabama recipe that was so successful on the offensive side of the ball. But, of course, you don't have that talent, and you don't have the Alabama infrastructure as well. But at least you have the guys who witnessed it, and they know what it takes to get there.
Yeah, Coleman, Joseph, I've been open about those. I question, just from what I've heard and from what I've seen from Coleman in the year, maybe if that is the best national hire. But the rest of the hires, or at least the reported hires and candidates, kind of make me excited, and that he is going national. And also meshing a staff and putting it together is different. It's different staff to staff. And so you need some big-time recruiters, and you need some guys that can really coach and develop. And you have to balance that really well. And so Sark is probably looking at, look, we don't have a ton of Texas ties, and you've got a Coleman who does have some. And you've got to, I mean, obviously Kansas State is majority of what he was, but he's got some Texas ties. And so maybe that's one of those where he's trying to balance that out. We don't know that. We have to give him kind of an open checkbook as Texas is done, and then also give him at least some time to try and grow this
thing. Yeah, I mean, we saw the wide receiver who committed earlier this week, Armani Winfield, one of the top 50 players in the country for the class of 2022. He talked about the importance of his relationship with Andre Coleman. And you don't keep a wide receivers coach around just for one recruit, right? But maybe that's something Andre Coleman can bring to the table. You know, all we saw last year was his on-field stuff. And the wide receivers did not play well last season. There's no doubt about it. They were not nearly as good as they needed to be. How much of that goes to Tom Herman's offense just not scheming guys open enough?
No spring.
We don't know. How much goes to no spring? Good point as well for a first-year coach. We don't exactly know. But maybe that's something Andre Coleman can bring to the table, right? Maybe he can be a really, really good recruiter. And hopefully, like you said, Rod, you know, Andre Coleman and Steve Sarkisian, they could come up with a way to make these Texas wide receivers more elite. Because we feel like there's talent there, right? I mean, there's no Devontae Smith on this football team. There's no doubt about that. There's no Jalen Waddle on this team right now. But there's some highly touted recruits. You feel all right about Jordan Whittington and what Jake Smith can do. Troy O'Meary, by all accounts, was looking really good before he got injured during fall camp this past season. You make Bijan Robinson part of your passing game as well. Feels like there is some talent to work with on the outside, KD. So hopefully that Sark-Coleman combo can make some things happen and get better results this next season.
Yeah, I think there's definitely talent there. And also one thing, guys, that I think if you're going to trust Sark right now and all the spots he's been at and everything he's seen and kind of who he is, and I'm with Rod, he's not that elite play caller yet, but Rod and I probably have too few of spots there. It's one of the few times, BK, where my top five is maybe a top three or four. Doesn't happen often. We know it goes the other way. But he's really, really well respected, and my guess is, so Paul and I were laughing on EGAT. That's the second plug in one.
Jeez,
what am I doing?
Man. Shout out.
I know.
Do you even care about this show, or
no,
do you just want to go do
me.
EGAT every day?
I like this show so much more. Y'all are so much cooler and more fun to talk to, and it, lots of stuff. But we
love
were.
Paul.
Oh, no, absolutely.
I do.
Yeah.
I do then.
Yeah.
I'm a fan.
Rod
except
does.
His Tupac take. The Tupac take. I didn't. care for.
DK's just breaking up everything. But we were kind of laughing that a lot of coaches, head coaches, don't know. They can't go to every position. Rod may have a better idea than a really good head coach if they're looking at a DB coaching his guys and saying, no, this guy really knows what he's talking about. You may not know every position. I trust Sark to know receiver, running back, and we definitely know he knows quarterback. Mm-hmm. Now, if we're hiring a defensive tackle coach and he's going, I'm not sure he's teaching the right technique. Some head coaches that are really good ones don't know that. I trust Sark with those positions, so Coleman's there to know that.
Yeah, it's almost, when Joe Brady came to LSU, one of their biggest issues, just fundamental football problems they were facing, was that their hands were bad. They had a lot of drop passes from the previous two seasons before Joe Brady got there in 2019. So Joe Brady put together this extensive kind of laboratory, if you will, of hand drills that he put the guys through the offseason and forced them to work on. Something that he just, as watching film, he came in and said, oh man, this offense ain't going to work if these guys can't catch the damn ball. All right, a fundamental football problem that you need to solve as a coach. And he solved it. He came in with some creative ways to make their hands better and to cultivate that craft and cultivate that part of their skill set. And if I'm looking at the wide receivers for Texas, the one thing I think you need to cultivate is they got to get off press coverage.
Yep.
The one, if you're watching film, you can just look and say, man, they can't get off press coverage. They can't do it. I don't know why people stop playing press coverage against them. I'd play it against them every down because they couldn't get off of it. And it's a problem that persisted the entire season. I want to see a problem start at the beginning of the year. I'm not going to blame you for having problems at the beginning of the year. You had a pandemic. You didn't have a spring. I get it. All right. I'm not unrealistic. But to have the, that's why I love what you saw from Chris Ash and you saw from Coleman Hutzler. Some of the issues that existed early on in the season, you saw them make schematic adjustments. Mm-hmm. You saw that linebacker core get better. And I can quantify that with the wide receivers. I did not necessarily see them get better at getting off press coverage. What happened was teams stopped playing press coverage against them, which I still do not understand. But coaches are paid good money for whatever reason. But I'm just saying that's something you need to come in and solve immediately. And on my criticism of Andre Coleman is he couldn't solve that. Hopefully Sark will come in and can scheme guys open, give them a schematic advantage so that they can have freer releases as wide receivers. But also, you got to figure out how to get off press coverage. All right, you got to be able to get off press coverage,
right?
Period. And it's something that you got to do. You got to be able to win against press coverage. If I can come up and just put any jabroni up in your face and play press man, most guys who you're a really good wide receiver, you salivate at that opportunity. You laughing at that guy. You're like, you really going to put this guy up against me with bump and run coverage? Watch me do him dirty. That was not the attitude and the mindset for the Texas wide receivers. And that's why Andre Coleman this year has got a lot to show me. Hopefully Sark can help him with that.
Do him.
I know the guys love him because I saw Jordan Whittington and all the guys saying you better keep Andre Coleman, and I get it. I get it. He's loved, and he's probably an awesome recruiter. But I also need somebody that can develop these wide receivers. You'll never have that Alabama offense if you don't develop wide receivers. Never.
It sounds like we're just giving Steve Sarkisian the benefit of the doubt with this Andre Coleman hire.
Yeah,
and that's kind of where I'm at, too, right?
Joseph, too.
I'm just going to trust him on this hire. Well, Joseph, we've seen more from Terry Joseph at Notre Dame the last couple of years than we've seen from Andre Coleman in his 1 year.
On the surface, you have.
Okay, on the surface. Well, on the surface, we haven't seen anything from Andre Coleman. So on the surface, yes, we have. I know you talked to some folks behind the scenes at Notre Dame, but yeah, Andre Coleman did not do nearly enough for me last year. And with some of the names that were mentioned with the Texas wide receiver coach vacancy, or at least what we thought was a vacancy, you know, you heard T. Martin's name there. You heard Holman Wiggins, who's been at Alabama, you know, the wide receivers coach for the first wide receiver Heisman winner in three decades. You heard Dennis Simmons. He's been at Oklahoma. How many first-round wide receivers has Oklahoma had over the last few years? I mean, you hear those names, you get really, really excited. And then you settle on Andre Coleman. And look, maybe there's a good coach somewhere within Andre Coleman. And I want to trust Sark. It's his first time here. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. But with what we saw last year, it felt like there were bigger names and better options out there for Texas.
Yeah, and every quiche is put together differently, right? Every lasagna tastes differently with different components. And that is, I just know that from looking at hires that Texas, Notre Dame, or just programs I'm following, they make. And I'm like, that's going to be a home run hire. And it's not. Now, most of them are, if you really are following college football and have a pulse on it, to where you realize, okay, that's going to be, this one's going to work. Saban to Alabama and what they're trying to do with the whole program organization was, you knew that was going to work. And a lot of assistant hires, I mean, I think Banks is going to work here, right? and it's going to help out a lot with recruiting. He's a special teams guru and then also a tight ends guy. But I'm, you know, I'm just kind of giving him this time because Coleman may serve something that we don't see on the surface. And you're right, BK, we didn't see anything on the surface. Rod, if there's only two hires and one, I do trust my Notre Dame people, and obviously that they're not going to just hate on the guy. But those are the two that I look at. I'm like, all right, from what I know, they're not good hires. But with Banks, with Flood, and with some of the other names, Bo Davis, like, this could be really good.
Yeah, and I totally agree with you about, you know, it's all about the chemistry. I mean, there are certain components, certain elements, compounds. You mix them together, and you get the perfect concoction. You'll get a remedy. You'll get whatever you desire. Too much of one thing can kill somebody, and it can be toxic, right? It can be poisonous. And I think if you have the right balance of those elements and is within your coaching staff, then maybe you can improve the coaching acumen of a particular coach or uplift his productivity and his effectiveness as a coach. So I'm not going to initially hate on it, but I'm just saying that I was critical of that all throughout the year. This is not a new thing. Rod B has been keeping up the stats, and I can share them with you, but when you targeted Texas wide receivers in press coverage, Sam Ehlinger averaged 3 yards per attempt. 3 yards per attempt, completing less than 30% of his passes when targeting Texas wide receivers in press coverage. Okay, I watched the film. I'm telling you, that is really bad. Really bad. You almost have to intentionally be that bad and getting off press coverage. So that has to improve, and that's a basic fundamental football thing. That's not something that's elaborate and sophisticated.
Right.
That's something you got to learn when you're playing, you know, when you're playing 7-on-7.
Right. Yeah, bump and run coverage is not a new concept. It's not an innovation to recent football, right? Guys have been doing that forever, and it should be one of the basic things that your receivers can do on a relatively consistent basis. We didn't get that at all last year.
No, we didn't. It's also the technical aspect. So if you're teaching technique, that's something that and I'm totally with Rod. I mean, this whole show, we were all about, you know, as the defense was coming along and growing, saying, you know what? Ash and Hutzler need some credit, and so does Hagen. And Giles, like, you know, these guys are coming together. And so, especially without a spring, it's even more hyper-focused on, okay, we're going to see tangible evidence of growth and development and teaching. And we're going to see it over the fall. And I said all year long, I said, guys, remember week one, I said, you know, we always say the old cliche, the coaches say, you get more improvement from week one to week two, win or loss or anything. And I said, that's going to be week one to five or six because of no spring. And I think we saw that with them. So, offensively, I'm totally with Rod. And the other thing, too, is, look, even if the OC, head coach, Yursich, Herman, whatever, even if they're not teaching a scramble drill, I'd say, hey, during our 10 minutes of personal stuff and team stuff, I'm going to do some scramble drill stuff. So if we can get a couple punters to play quarterback here, we kind of think that may be important with our real quarterback.
Yeah, we heard that from Tom Herman all year long. He was saying this thing was a work in progress leading up to the Iowa State game, which was the second to last game of the regular season. So we'll talk more about that. It feels like the majority of Steve Sarkisian's coaching staff has been filled out. Still waiting on who the defensive coordinator is going to be. We've got a couple of names. We'll bring those to you later in the show. We'll also play audio from Sark's interview with Scott Van Pelt on SportsCenter late last night. It's the Triple Option with RBKD, Rod Babers, Kevin Dunn, BK with y'all on a Thursday. Coming up next, all good things must come to an end.
Welcome back to the Triple Option with RBKD, a Motown-esque Thursday edition of the Triple Option with RBKD. We'll get back to Sark Reek right here on 104.9 The Horn, talking a lot about Steve Sarkisian and him implementing his new staff here at Texas. Let's get back to Texas. Let's get to Texas basketball here. And like I said, we'll get to Texas football a little bit later down the road. Texas basketball with a disappointing loss to Texas Tech. And it was one of those games where Texas essentially outplayed Texas Tech for most of the game on both ends of the floor. I think, gentlemen, it came down to a couple of things, lowlights for the Longhorns. I think the 15 turnovers and the 19 points that Texas Tech scored off of those 15 turnovers might have been the most crucial part of the stat line. Texas actually got 0 points off of Tech turnovers. Tech ended up with, I believe, 7 turnovers total in the game. And, of course, that crucial turnover down the stretch to give Texas Tech the layup to make it 77-77 all with 36 seconds left. And that was a steal off the inbounds pass for Texas Tech. And ultimately, they end up winning the game 79-77. BK, I'll throw it to you first. You were a little cautiously optimistic about this game. You thought the Longhorns would have some disadvantages because of the matchup versus Tech and that guard-heavy lineup for them. No question about it. And it started with Mac McClung, who hit the game winner, but also kept him in the game for most of the first half, making plays.
Yeah, Mac McClung had a hell of a night, one of his best games as a Texas Tech Red Raider. He's been really, really good as a transfer to that Tech program. He's made an immediate impact, and he was everywhere last night for Texas Tech. He hit some crazy shots, and obviously that game winner with 3 seconds to go, very, very impressive. But Texas has nobody to blame but itself for last night, KD. I mean, Rod, you brought up the turnovers, and obviously Texas Tech getting a bunch of easy buckets off of those turnovers, and the free throw line, 18 of 31 at the charity stripe last night. And Jericho Sims by himself went 6 for 14 at the foul line. He had 2 big misses late, which allowed that layup to tie the game at 77. So, yeah, turnovers and free throws, huge, huge problems for the Longhorns. They shot well. They did a lot of things right last night. It feels like they should have won this game and should have won this game relatively easily, but they let Texas Tech hang around with self-inflicted mistakes.
And maybe I'm doing glass half full here, guys, but look, they stole one in Morgantown in a game they shouldn't have won, that they trailed most of the game, and this was kind of karma, basketball gods stealing one back. And so you guys are exactly right. I mean, the points off turnovers, 19 to nothing. The free throws, I will give Sims credit. Defensively, what he was able to do was pretty impressive. But offensively, I mean, to go 6 of 14, yeah, the free throws, kind of the sloppiness. I mean, they were just lackadaisical at times. And against Tech, you can't do that.
No.
Tech obviously wants to draw a lot of fouls. They're a pump fake team. And Texas, I thought early on for most of the game, like most of the game, did a pretty good job and were in control of that. And then all of a sudden, it just kind of spiraled out of control. So I'm not too worried. I mean, this is going to be a tough Big 12. We knew that. And I figured there was going to be a loss in there we didn't expect. I think I just feel better about it because we just followed a game that, Rod, we should have lost in Morgantown.
Yeah, and I agree with you about the Big 12. It's going to be a bloodbath. It's going to be that kind of league where the margin for error is going to be really, really thin. And on any given night, you play flawed basketball. That's essentially what the Longhorns played. I mean, they played with great effort. Even Shaka said that, but it was flawed effort. It was sloppy, as KD said. And, yeah, the free throws, points off turnovers, they weren't able to create enough havoc, if you will, in the second half because they didn't – the transition defense, I think, was a little bit – was subpar in the second half. In the second half, that's when Tech made their move. I mean, they shot 37% in the first half, came back and shot around 45% in the second half. And, you know, Texas had 8 turnovers, right? Most of their turnovers came in the second half. And they were 8 of 24 down the stretch and really just gave up. They had a double-digit lead at one point. So you're right, BK. They were their own worst enemy at times. They got to be able to clean it up. This might be the best thing that ever happened to this team, though. We know the ceiling for the team. The ceiling for this team is to have a number one seed in the tournament. But if they do lack the focus, we can see this team become in the middle of the road in the Big 12 because it's a really tough league. So maybe it's a good thing that you can kind of reawaken this group, get them to crystallize their focus. Even though I'm not saying they lost focus, but you can get them to buckle down even harder.
These teams don't like each other, do they, BK?
No.
And there's also that added element of Chris Beard being a Texas guy. I saw you tweet about that last night, and that was a guy that a lot of us looked at and thought, hey, Texas should go out and get. You got the feeling Texas and Shaka really wanted this one.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And that's 3 years in a row Tech has come into Austin and beaten the Longhorns. Now, last year, Texas did win the game in Lubbock. Really, really important late in the regular season. At least we thought it was going to be really, really important for Texas's tournament resume. Of course, the tournament never happened, so not that big of a deal in hindsight. But, yeah, this one hurt. I mean, the Longhorns led for 37 minutes last night, guys. Texas Tech led for 36 seconds. In the whole game, they led for 36 seconds. But obviously the only time it matters when you have the lead is when the clocks hit triple zeros in the second half. And for Texas Tech, it's their first ever road win over a top five team. They've had a lot of firsts in the Chris Beard era. He's done a phenomenal, phenomenal job there. But, man, this was a game that Texas needed to win. And y'all know my thoughts on Shaka Smart, right? I don't put too much of this game last night on Shaka Smart. Like, I've never heard a coach in any sport tell their players to be less aggressive. Texas, the guards, the backcourt, the upperclassmen, the guys who have been so aggressive all year long and were so aggressive offensively in the first half that led Texas to scoring 48 first-half points against a team that gives up 58 a game. Going into last night, Tech's defense gave up 58 points per game. Texas nearly had that in the first half. For some reason, the Texas guards were not aggressive at all in the second half. Like, they were doubting themselves. They weren't sure of themselves at all. I mean, Andrew Jones had 18 in the first half. He had just 2 points in the second half. Matt Coleman and Courtney Ramey, like, those guys were not driving and creating offense like they were in the first half. I can't imagine that's something that Shaka Smart said at halftime. I don't know what got into those guys, but they were not themselves in the second half, and that led to the fact that Texas only scored 29 points in the final 20 minutes of this game.
Yeah, they weren't. Hopefully it's going to be a reminder, or for their, you know, it's their first loss in conference, that, hey, this is going to be a tough, you know, two games a week type battle, and you go week in and week out, you try and get better, and there are going to be some games where you just can't take your foot off the gas pedal, and they did. And so I still really like this team, and it's one of those that you wish you would have had, but this is a fun team to watch right now. And, you know, so just kind of move forward, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's one game, right? You got to get back on track. You play one of the bottom feeders in this conference on Saturday in Kansas State. That's a game you need to win. And, look, it's one loss, and maybe Rod's right. I mean, maybe this is something that can wake Texas up a little bit and really get them going. And I don't know. I mean, I want to win the Big 12. Like, at this point, you start 4-0, and you beat Kansas on the road, and you beat West Virginia on the road. It's like, all right, man, like, maybe we can go through this season with only two or three or four losses in conference play. And, hell, the way Baylor's played this year, you might need one or two losses to win this conference. So you'd like to take care of business on your home floor. I know home floors aren't the same this year as they've been in years past, and there were no fans at the Flun last night. But, man, I mean, you still got to go to Lubbock. You still have to play Baylor twice. Like, if your goal is to win the Big 12, any loss hurts, especially one in which you have a double-digit second-half lead.
And with the pandemic, guys, it's not like it used to be going into the Irwin Center where you just weren't going to win there. I mean, that was like going into New Orleans. So now, without the fans, you got to remember, BK, there's not that home court advantage. So you get the two on the road, and you come back, and little different.
Yeah, I mean, some places do have fans, though. There's going to be fans in Lubbock.
I'm kidding. The Irwin Center was never a really tough place to play.
Oh.
So it's kind of the same thing.
Not at all?
No, not at all. Year in, year out.
Okay.
Actually, well, I will say, I mean, there were some years, 1990, I'm kind of hoping with the new place that they can at least get some of that energy back. A lot of that, though, with Texas basketball fans my whole life has been, what does the team look like? Are they fun to watch?
Right.
This would be a team where people would come out and maybe get loud.
And I will say, the last couple of years when Tech's played in Austin, Rod, there have been pretty close to 50% Tech fans at the Flun.
That's what I'm talking about.
Maybe it would have been a little bit of a different story, Rod, because this team was ranked number 4 in the country. And
they're fun.
KD talks about the product. They look really, really good. But, yeah, maybe home court advantage. I don't know. I don't want to use that as an excuse. They shot themselves in the foot too much last night.
No, I agree. I mean, this is, like you said, they won on the road. Not that the home court advantage is what it usually would be in a pandemic. It's just disappointing that one of the most exciting teams or products Texas basketball has produced in the last, 10 years or so, Longhorn fans don't really get a chance to show their support.
Yeah.
But I agree with KD. This is, this is the irony of it that, if Longhorn fans would have just gone out and seen the team before, then they probably, maybe the basketball guys would have been kinder, but the basketball guys decided, no, we're going to give you your best team when nobody can actually go see them play. I think it's kind of weird like that.
If they keep playing like this, Shaka Smart can't cut his hair, and there can't be any more fans at the Irwin Center ever again.
Yeah, right.
I'll take not being able to watch the Horns in person if they keep playing the way they've played this season, no question.
Rewatching the game right now. It's on LHN in front of me, and just the Ramey bunny that he missed at the 4 minute mark. Mm. The turnover to put that thing tied at 77. It just felt like one of those games.
Yeah, just brain farts.
And a lot of that's props to Tech too.
Yeah, I mean they're a great defensive team, one of the best in the country, top five in Ken Pom defensive efficiency. I mean they do a lot of things right, and they're really really well coached. But yeah, I mean a lot of those wounds. I mean that turnover by Courtney Ramey. That's a freshman mistake right there. You can't have that from a guy who's been on your team for 3 years and, you know, having seniors missing free throws at the end of the game like Jericho Sims. That can't happen. Maybe he needs to go back to shooting them left-handed. Y'all remember that? Jericho Sims at the start of his college career as a righty would shoot his free throws lefty.
Yeah.
And he figured it out at least a little bit to the point where he could start shooting him with his normal hand. But
Tristan Thompson did the same thing.
Tristan
we had
Thompson.
Two Texas guys.
Yeah, two Texas big men. I don't know what the deal is, but guys who shot one way would shoot free throws the other way.
That's weird, man. Yeah. Why? Why, though? Because
they were so bad, I guess.
They were so bad, yeah.
I don't know. I don't know.
It can't be worse.
You should go granny style.
I've never heard of that before.
Go with the Rick Barry granny style, baby.
Yeah.
Hey, man, it would work. Will Chamberlain did it. It worked for him, but he said it made him look like a sissy, so he stopped.
Yeah,
he stopped. He talked to Rick Barry.
He did. That's what he said.
He told. Yeah, no, I know. He told Rick Barry. He said, you shot the best percentage you ever have. He said, yeah. He said, it just, you know, it's not cool. Mm. And when you're trying to pull the numbers per day that he is, you got to do everything you can to gear your life to looking cool.
Right, yeah. He wasn't going to bang 16 women a day if he was shooting free throws.
There's a lot of things
underhanded
that go into that.
Yeah.
That's hard work.
Absolutely.
That's preparation.
Shaq said it too, though.
Yeah.
Shaq said he wouldn't do it too. Shaq actually was asked by Shaq, said, I'll never shoot like that because it makes me look like an idiot. I look stupid, and that's why I won't do it. And Shaq admitted he would shoot more effectively like that, but he wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
Literally, that's the ego people have, is even if it made you more effective because it makes you look bad, you wouldn't do it. That's ego in a nutshell. That's narcissism in a nutshell.
Dude, Shaq would have broken every record ever. He'd be the all-time leading scorer in the history of the NBA if he was willing to do just that. But the ego got in the way.
So K-State coming up on Saturday, 7 p.m. You can hear it right here on the Horn. And so just get back into it, right? You got one home game, then you go back to Ames next week.
Yeah, a couple of winnable games coming up for Texas. We'll see if they can get back on track. By the way, I will give some love to Greg Brown. Did not have a great game last night, but apparently he was shooting free throws well after the game came to a close. He was the only guy out there, which, you know, why the hell was Jericho Sims not out there shooting free throws after going 6 of 14 at the line? Hey, senior, come on now. But Greg Brown, as a freshman, he's a one-and-done guy. We all know that, but he cares. He cares about this team, and he was disappointed in his team's free throw shooting, so that was pretty cool to hear that he stayed for about half an hour after the game to work on some free throws. We'll talk more about that game.
I know why he did that, guys. I know why. I mean, if y'all know Greg Brown Sr.
Oh,
Greg
right.
Brown Sr. is really tough on Greg Brown Jr. He is he is hard on him. Trust me. I guarantee you, Pops was telling him, man, you got to step up. Like, you need to be the example. You should be leading. You should be the one out there leading your team. I know Greg well enough to know that what he's echoing to his son, because, you know, that's just the kind of guy he is. And he's done a great job, by the way.
I buy that. Good stuff right there. All right, so Texas basketball loses its first conference game of the season, and that six-game winning streak comes to a close. It's the Triple Option with RBKD. We've got Urban Meyer news. Apparently he's going to get back into coaching. Is this a bad look for the University of Texas? We'll discuss next.
Oh, when the sun beats down and burns the tar. Motown Thursday here on the Triple Option with RBKD. Motown. If I run into someone who doesn't like Motown music, like, I'm pretty open with music. Yeah, it's just like, I mean, I just have questions. It's like, there's a lot of songs I would ask about or play and be like, you don't like this? And this is one of them, right, guys?
It's a nice song. I don't know if it's, what is this song, Under the Boardwalk?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who sings it? Who sings Under the Boardwalk?
This is The Drifters.
The Drifters. Okay, yes, it is very melancholy. No, I'm with you. It's a nice song.
Yeah, it's a nice song.
I don't have it. I need to have it on my phone. I don't have it. I need to. It's a good song.
Nah, it'll be encrypted like a Bitcoin. I mean, you're going to lose it within a week. So
don't
waste your time on that. I've talked about that. Just keep everything in your case logic like we did back in the day, Rod. You know that. How dare you? All you Horn listeners, if you're a Cowboys fan especially, or you know someone who's a Cowboys fan, you can win a $100 Cowboy gift card and that's to their gift shop at DallasCowboys.com. All you got to do is get to HornFM.com. It's courtesy of Miller Lite. So pretty cool deal, $100. All you got to do is get to HornFM.com, and you can sign up for that. Cowboys picking 10th in the NFL draft. The Jaguars are picking first in the NFL draft.
The who?
Jaguars.
Spell that.
Jaguars.
I like how people, instead of Jack, because some people say Jaguars.
Mm-hmm.
Like Durwood used to say bob wire instead of barbed wire.
Okay.
But so some people.
He's missing like four letters.
Yeah.
There.
Some people kind of overdo that. So.
What about the Jaguars?
I've heard that Jaguars. Too. I've heard some different kind
of. I think that's how the car company pronounces it in their commercials.
Jaguars.
They're Jaguars. The Jacksonville Jaguars.
So they're picking first. It seems like there's going to be some pretty good jobs out there. Justin Herbert and Los Angeles Chargers would be one. But guys, you look at this, and they've been kind of an S show. Unlike the Cowboys and Texans, in a different way, actually worse for a long time. They've made one championship game that was years ago with Brunell and them, and there's a lot of questions about their owner, the connection with London and the fascination with that. But Urban Meyer, a guy who was obviously we were talking about a lot here on this station, reported maybe to be talking to Texas and about that job. It seems like there was definitely some communication there. And Texas fans, for a little while, really wanted him there. And, guys, it looks like now it's a done deal that Urban's going to be going to Jacksonville, and they're going to have Trevor Lawrence in that first pick. I would think they'd go with that. But this is a guy who's a legendary college football coach. You talk about in modern day Nick Saban, Urban Meyer is on that Mount Rushmore for what he was able to do, Rod. And now he goes to that next level that people have been talking about for a little while. One, are you surprised, and how do you think this turns out?
Yeah, I don't know how it turns out. I'm not surprised at all. We knew Urban Meyer wanted to get back into coaching. We weren't sure in exactly what aspect of coaching. Was he going to get to the college level, or was he going to go to the NFL? The Jags offer so much opportunity to rebuild the franchise really quickly. We know they're going to get Trevor Lawrence with number one overall pick, but, man, they have multiple picks, guys, in the first, second, fourth, fifth, and seventh rounds.
Yeah.
They got multiple picks in a ton of rounds. They got $80 million in projected salary cap space, too. So they can rebuild through free agency, and they can rebuild through the draft. They can use both of those avenues. So if you're Urban Meyer, I'm sure they're going to give him carte blanche. He's going to have complete power there. I'm sure he's going to hire himself an offensive coordinator with NFL play calling experience, and he'll have a GM, whether they're going to hire his own GM or they're going to hire from within or promote from within, I should say. I'm not sure. But Urban Meyer is going to run the show, and he's always wanted to run the show. And this is his way, guys, of trying to one-up Nick Saban, right? Nick Saban, he's not going to surpass Nick Saban as the GOAT in college football. It's done. It's over. All right? He can't do it. But I think now he can put himself in a rarefied air, a different level of coaches, if he can bring the Jags to a Super Bowl. That would put Urban Meyer in terms of the GOAT conversations, put him in a different GOAT conversation with the greatest football minds of all time.
Well, and also, BK, do something that he couldn't do. So Nick Saban's done everything. Nick Saban is the best college football coach modern era. You're talking about Bear, Newt, but I would throw Saban as all time because of how tough it is right now.
I would take
right?
out modern era.
Yeah.
I would say
everyone. Well, no, I'm just being real about that, being a historian here, BK. So some people actually read before 1950.
Okay. Tell me about the Princeton coach from the late 1800s. I'm sure he was way better than Nick Saban going up against all those milkmen.
The wrinkles they had on the wing tee, guys. Let's go ahead and get into that a little bit. No, but what Saban didn't do was win at the NFL level.
For sure.
And so Urban can do that and say, look, I won three in less time than you, and I won at every stop I was at, and I won a Super Bowl.
My biggest question, guys, is this a bad look for Texas? I mean, we know how much Texas wanted to bring Urban Meyer in as their next head coach. There was a very public coaching search, and all the cards were on the table for Texas to try to hire Urban Meyer. And what, it was a month and a half ago where Urban Meyer turned down the job, citing health concerns as the reason he turned down the job. And then a month later, he takes a different job. Now, it's different. It's NFL versus college. And there's not as much pressure being the head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars as there is being the head coach of the Texas Longhorns. You know, maybe it'd be one thing if he took the Jets job where he has to deal with the New York media market and a bunch of rabid fans who care a whole hell of a lot. Maybe that would be something.
He's got the London market. The London Times is all over.
Oh, I'm sure they're freaking out, man. They're losing their mind driving on the wrong side of the road, worried about this. But is this a bad look, Rod? I mean, once again, it was literally 6 weeks ago. I think it was December 6th when the report came out where Urban Meyer said no to Texas because of health concerns. And then in the same offseason, he takes a different head coaching job. Is this sort of symbolic and a representation of where this Texas football program is right now?
It's not a good look, but Longhorn fans are used to it now, right? I mean, you went after Nick Saban and couldn't get Nick Saban. And then at that point, there were other coaches that were turned down. Hell, Jim Mora turned down the Texas job. I mean, so Texas is at that point now. Like I said, Sark's got to make Texas cool again. Texas was considered the top job in football 20, 30 years ago. That is not the case anymore. People don't think like that. People think Texas, the Texas job, is a bit of a headache. And I think Urban Meyer is an opportunist, and I think he's really good at cherry picking the perfect opportunities for himself. And I wish we all could be that good at picking our opportunities. Yeah. But he didn't think Texas was a good opportunity. He didn't think it was. I think he looked at Texas and went, man, that's a chance I can go there and fail. That's a chance I can go there and fail miserably. I think he believes he has a better chance of success of bringing back the Jacksonville Jaguars with all their resources than coming here to Texas and bringing Texas all the way back.
Yeah, I think there's
that's
a lot there.
Probably what it is.
I mean, yeah. And to add to that, Rod, I mean, we hope Steve Sarkisian is Paul Gaudio. You guys know who that is?
Ooh, give me, who is that? That's a good reference. Give me that. What is that?
Adidas creative director who made Adidas cool again.
Mm.
Wow, good job.
Do you remember how Adidas kind of fell off? And it was one of those, even when Rod and I were kids, and we were probably Nike guys, and our old man would be like, hey, you should get Adidas. And it's like, Adidas isn't cool anymore. And then all of a sudden, my nephew's sporting Adidas. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, Adidas is cool again, right? And so Texas, you can go through those ebbs and flows, and it's cyclical. But that's what you hope Sark is, to where a Jim Mora would never turn down the Texas job like he did.
Yeah, and I think it's different. I said this a few weeks ago because I think we had this debate at the time, right? What happens if Urban Meyer takes a different job this offseason after spurning Texas? The NFL is a different beast. It really is. I mean, you don't have to deal with the headaches of recruiting. And, Rod, you talked about some of the other headache that goes into being the head coach at the University of Texas. But the NFL is a whole different ballgame. So I said if Urban Meyer takes a college job this offseason, that would be really, really bad. Or even next offseason, too, right? If he takes USC, if that opens up, or, hell, one of the other blue blood type programs opens up, if Brian Kelly leaves Notre Dame and Urban Meyer comes in, then that would have been a really, really bad look for Texas. But I think coaching at the NFL level is a different enough thing to where I don't think Texas fans need to view this as, oh, my God, we're really, really in a bad way right now.
No, I'm with you. I think Texas fans are past that point now. It's all about Sark. I think you couldn't get Urban Meyer this time, and I'm sure they tried to get Urban Meyer, tried to get Nick Saban. So what do? You end up with Nick Saban assistants and Urban Meyer assistants.
Mm-hmm.
That's
yeah,
the reality of
that's
it.
That's true.
You can't get the, right? You couldn't get the top dog. You know what? I will get the second in command in, damn it. And that's what Texas did. They went and got Sark, who's second in command. They went and got that with Urban Meyer, and they got Tom Herman. That's the plan. You can't get the man, then go get the man next to the man, damn it.
Yeah, and it's all about kind of what the pecking order is. So if some people go out and they're looking to get laid, option number four is better than other people's option number one. And I think Texas is still a good enough job where option three or four can really work. And the other thing, too, that Urban Meyer put out, and he said this a couple times on the pregame show, that the whole image and likeness and some of it's kind of where college football is turning, I think it really was not appealing to him.
Yeah.
It was unappealing. And I think some of that plays into it. And also how he wants to operate. Like, you know, you're going to have to put guardrails up for him because of his past.
Yeah, very true.
And guys, how this affects Texas, think about this. His son-in-law is the quarterback's coach at Ohio State right now, and they have the verbal commitment of Quinn Ewers. If he starts pillaging at Ohio State staff, which a lot of people think he is going to go to that staff, if he takes Corey Dennis, I believe is his name, you know, you may see some of those verbal commitments for future classes, especially from the state of Texas to side. I don't like this instability. I really like that assistant coach or that quarterback's coach. I might go look at Texas again. You may see that. Also, Chris Ash may be plucked as well to be a safeties coach, assistant coach, position coach for Urban Meyer because he loves him some Chris Ash too. So keep an eye on those two developments.
I saw Charlie Strong being mentioned as well, BK.
Yeah, how about that? You want to talk about a Texas tie. Apparently there's a belief that Charlie Strong could join Urban Meyer in some capacity. I don't know if it'd be the DC or just a position coach, but there is thought that Charlie Strong could join forces with Urban Meyer.
Wow.
The Jacksonville Jaguars coaching staff. Or Jaguars. Or Jaguars.
Jaguars.
Whatever you call it.
Jaguars.
All right, we'll take your thoughts. 337-3776. Is Urban Meyer taking the Jacksonville Jaguars job a bad look for the University of Texas, or do you just not care anymore? We're all in on Steve Sarkisian. We want to hear from you. It's the Triple Option with RBKD. We'll keep the NFL conversation going, but we'll bring it back to the state of Texas. We've got Cowboys news. We've got Texans news to talk about. The Cowboys trying to surround Mike McCarthy with a coaching staff. The Texans looking for a head coach. We'll give you the latest rumors and developments there next.